Off the Ball, GAA.
Honestly, I wouldn't have put Mark as the manager type. Now, Mark's been extremely, he's always been an extremely smart player, but in terms of that management role, I possibly would have seen him as a coach.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The sleepy midweek night that it was supposed to be, and it turned out to be anything but. We've got a full house for you. Dara, good morning to you.
Morning, Ger.
Matthew, how are you?
Ger.
Enda. Your boys.
Doing?
How to give you a heart attack. Sorry, I assume everybody knows Enda's first love is not Donegal, but actually Celtic.
It was revealed in the chat a couple of days ago, actually. People were trying to figure out who I supported. I presume the Arsenal fans in the chat were trying to figure out who I supported. because I've been accused of bias on more than one occasion in the show in my short, brief period back. But yeah, Celtic are the number one.
Do you have an English team?
If you had to pick.
I'm not going to reveal that here.
He's a Man United fan.
Oh. Ah. He's an Arsenal fan. He's secretly an Arsenal fan.
We are surrounded on all sides.
But yeah, no, that was genuinely, I will say, probably 30 of the worst minutes of my life. Multiple
which
times.
After the first Motherwell goal,
there's still the opportunity that, you know, Celtic are going to come back here. But after that second one, I was like, nah, that's it.
There is a possibility that at 7:32 of the morning, people don't know, but it was a 98th minute penalty that gave Celtic a 3-2 win at Motherwell, which keeps the opportunity of them winning the title in the final day of the season alive. All they've got to do is beat Hearts now. Otherwise, they would have had to win by 3.
Yeah, we were working this out. It would have been 3-0 because Celtic would have scored more.
But as it stands, all they've got to do is beat Hearts the weekend at Parkhead.
Yeah.
Because there was a VAR controversy. We love VAR in the show.
I know, yeah.
Would you like 2.5 hours of... you can see here where the ball touches his hand first before his hand touches the ball.
Yeah.
Come on.
Do you want to play the commentary?
Oh, yeah, okay.
This decision?
John Beaton has been told to come over to the VAR screen by Andrew Dallas and look at this again.
Trusty is at hand. Well, I wonder whether it's a hand. That raised hand, the arm up, the left arm.
Well, that is what they're looking at. Here's the verdict. Penalty! A penalty for Celtic!
As Gary Weaver on commentary with Chris Sutton on co-coms. And then the hilarious analysis afterwards was, that's a heat. That's a heat, it's not a hand. Because the logic was, if that touches his hand, it would have just fallen down. I'm like, well, when the goalkeeper comes out and punches the ball, does it just automatically dribble down? I don't think so.
The reaction to this was actually genuinely incredible. And we can...
Well, sorry, you're obviously on the side. It was a stonewall penalty. Why did it take them so long to give it?
No. I'm actually not. I stand by my earlier... thoughts on the show in terms of the Arsenal stuff, and in that VAR should not be deciding titles for major decisions like this. We just shouldn't be in a situation where football is being decided upon and re-refereed like this. But I think it's one of those that can genuinely go either way. The referee could look at that and say, you know, there's a little bit of tussling going on. Is his hand pushed up by Austin Trusty? Does that cause him to handle the ball? Is there enough in it? Does it definitively touch his hand? Like, there's loads of ways a referee could have looked at this, but I think it does touch his hand. And by the rules of the, you know, the Scottish laws that they have up there, if it hits his hand, his hand's in that position and it's a handball and it's a penalty. I think initially a lot of people thought it was an elbow.
That's what I thought.
And I was like, oh, God. That would be extremely harsh to give it as an elbow, because Austin Trusty went down holding his face as if he got elbowed. I think he might have gotten a slight touch, but like
he certainly helped by being theatrical.
Well, this is the thing. If Austin Trusty doesn't go down holding his face,
no one gets rewarded.
It does. Yeah. The game's probably not stopped, and then it's probably
even
not
still,
given.
There wasn't that many protests.
from Celtic players or even the Celtic management on the sideline.
Martin Neal says that the screen that they showed it to him on was too small and he needed an extra pair of glasses. Okay.
Love that.
His self-deprecation never stops. No. It's great. He still shouldn't have been as rude about Keith Andrews as he was. I see people in the comments going, oh, you've all changed your tune. It's like, no, it's okay. You can hold conflicting. We all contain a multitude. Yeah, that's Martin O'Neill. Anyway.
But the reaction to this, it's been incredible. I've seen so many people who I've never seen talk about Scottish football reacting to this. And obviously it's because of the seriousness and the impact this has. Gary Lineker said it was the worst VAR decision he has ever seen, which, I mean, is beyond hyperbole. The question I would ask Gary Lineker is, if this decision doesn't cause the season to go into the final day of the season and potentially Celtic win the league title, if that's a 35th minute decision in a nothing game in the middle of the season, is that the worst VAR decision you've seen of all time? It's not.
It's not.
It's clearly not. It was maybe a 70-30 decision where the referee came down in favour of Celtic. That's what happened.
70-30.
It should have been like a
30% chance that's not given.
Really? I would have said a 30% chance that is given. But look, let's power rank the top five shittest VAR decisions of all time. That'd be good. Yeah, we'd knock two hours out of that, wouldn't we?
That'll be fun. But
anyway, in the comments there, lads, let's be having you.
Do you know what is fun for me, though, is watching all these people who have derided the Scottish League suddenly become so invested and so interested in what happens with Scottish.
It's the Scottish
League. Terrible. Who cares? I could manage Celtic with my eyes closed. The three of us, if we took over Celtic,
I think we would win the league too.
And now suddenly, in the last 3 months, because there's Celtic or Rangers might not win the league, everyone's suddenly invested in what happens in Scotland.
Is that not a good thing for Scottish football? No, do you not want people talking about the league?
I don't mind people talking about the league. I don't mind people getting invested in the Scottish league. It's good for Scottish football. That is correct. But if you're an expert in Scottish refereeing after watching it for 2.5 months, then I'm sorry, I'm just not going to take your opinion seriously.
2.5 minutes.
What's 2.5 months?
You'd be an expert in anything.
What's the difference between the Scottish refereeing and the referee?
Right, so we think English refereeing's bad. Mm. Take half of the percent, like half of the quality of the Premier League, and half that again. That's the quality of refereeing you're getting in Scotland in the best of times. They have four main referees. Two of them were on this match. So you had John Beaton, who was the main referee for this game, and then you had Andrew Dallas, who was the VAR who made the decision. The two of them are two of the biggest refs in Scotland.
No body shaming here.
No. They're two of the main referees. They're not great. They definitely do not have the depth of quality referees in Scotland. And one of the biggest issues that has
Andrew Dallas something to Hugh Dallas?
I'm not sure.
Stuart Dallas.
Could be. Maybe it's just a Scottish name that...
No, it's Hugh Dallas. So Hugh Dallas was an infamous referee from 20 years ago who frequently decided all firms.
Well...
And maybe his son is making retribution.
Could be, but...
for the sins of the father.
Just a final point on VAR and the Scottish League in general and how it's been implemented there is that... So the Championship, we spoke about the Championship, they don't have VAR because a lot of the clubs said that they don't want to invest in the technology, that they would have to upgrade their stadiums to get the technology to work correctly. And as a result, the Championship doesn't have it. The Scottish League went a different direction. They have even worse grounds than they do in the Championship. They don't have as many angles as the Premier League, so people are probably wondering, why did we only get the one angle of that handball? I would imagine it's because we've only had that one angle in Fir Park in Motherwell because they don't have the infrastructure there. So you have poor referees trying to referee games in Scotland with worse technology than they have in the English Premier League. And there have been... you could probably count 10 worse decisions than this. There was one decision a couple of years ago for Celtic, a VAR offside decision, and the closest angle they could get was the far corner camera angle to which the referees then had to draw the lines across the pitch based on the halfway line. It was about 60 metres away from the actual decision. So it all lends itself to being terrible.
They shouldn't have VAR.
They shouldn't.
If you don't have the angles for it, then they shouldn't be in place.
Yeah, they shouldn't.
That's ridiculous.
They shouldn't. It lends itself to conspiracies, and that's what we have in Scotland. We have conspiracies that the referees are in the books of Celtic. We have conspiracies that the referees are in the books of Rangers, depending on who you ask. And really what the reality of the situation is the referees are just not trained as well. They don't have the depth of quality, and the VAR is worse because they don't have as much technology or help. What we do have in Scotland, though, and what will be amazing viewing is the Scottish FA actually do a VAR review.
All right.
With their top referee every month. So they go back through all of the VAR decisions with Willie Collum, who was previously a head referee in Scotland, now the head of the referees in Scotland, and he goes through all the VAR refereeing decisions in the Scottish League. So next month we will get this decision and he will walk us through what happened.
Okay, that's not talking about VAR. It's amazing for Celtic to have got it to that. Are you finished, sir?
No, yeah. I'm done. Yeah.
So yeah. Just on the VAR review.
I've got it out of me.
I assume at the end of the VAR review.
You were bringing it up now.
I just want to get a last little dig in on it. Like, I assume at the end of the review here, when they go back through all these decisions, or particularly this one, and realise that they've got a couple of things wrong here, I assume the inevitable outcome will be that they get rid of VAR. Will it? No, it won't. So anyway, moving on.
You're right.
I had to get that out. I've been holding my fire all morning.
Thursday morning therapy here on Off the Ball Breakfast. If you want some, 0879 180 180. You can just give us a voice note and we'll cancel whatever worries you have about anything in the world except VAR.
Is there a part of you that would like to see Hearts win the title?
No.
Really, no?
He's a Celtic fan.
People have said this to me. No, like, what football fan wants another football team to win the league in, as opposed to them?
Would you not feel, right, so say next season.
So when Man City won the first title, you're like, oh, that's good.
It's going to improve the league.
It's great to see somebody other than Man United.
Haven't had this, like, historic reign over the Premier League. There's been winners over the years that haven't been Man United, whereas, you know, it's just Celtic and Rangers, and that's all it's ever been.
Yeah, if Hearts were in the race with Rangers, I would want Hearts to win the league. I think Hearts at this point is actually, it's inevitable that they will win the league in the next couple of years, based on the transfers and the quality of the players they brought in this year, and based on the market they seem to be operating in for this summer. There's already rumours that they're shopping in the same windows as Celtic are. So
yeah,
if they have the same
Bodo Glimt striker.
So if they have the same budget and as Celtic, then you can definitely start to move up in the Scottish League very, very quickly if you start to spend money. And like,
they have a competitive advantage with the data set and their ability to use data and the analysis of good managers and good management and good coaches. They have that data set as well as they have for every player in world football, and it's proprietary. Tony Bloom owns it. He sells it to other teams, but I presume he's given it all to Hearts for free. Is he part or full owner?
I think he's a part owner for now, but he's directly involved now. There was questions around whether he was going to be involved in any way, but now we see him, now that they're in a title race, we see him at most Hearts games. So he's definitely having an influence there. But yeah, like, compared to the money that he has had to spend relative to the leagues that he's operating in, you know, Brighton, if Brighton signed a 25 million player, that's skin off his nose. But if Hearts spend 25 million total over the course of like five or six players in the Scottish League, then they're league title contenders. So, and then suddenly that snowballs into Champions League money and you can start to ride that wave a little bit. So it's a win-win situation for Tony Bloom, to be honest.
I would say it's a win-win in the long run for Celtic as well, and that more eyes watching this is actually hugely beneficial. And if it's not just I have to watch Celtic Rangers the four times they play a season, it's actually, Hearts are playing.
That's where I'm coming from, that it's a better watch for you.
I think in the long run. It has made the season better that Hearts have been in the title race. And when I say in the title race, they've been the title...
In the lead the whole time.
Leaders the entire time. They've been top of the table since September. So it will be the heartbreak of all heartbreaks if they do lose the league on Saturday.
Yeah, both Celtic and Rangers, though, have been absolute basket cases at various different points in this season.
Yeah.
Like, and that has contributed to the reason as to why Hearts are at the top of the table, and take nothing away from them. I mean, for them to get 80 points in any season is obviously an improvement on what they will have been doing. But I think if Celtic had their house in order, which they haven't really had their house in order for quite some time, and they've maybe gotten away with that with the quality of the league.
But, well, Sky Sports did a graphic last night for Martin O'Neill, the table with Martin O'Neill in charge, and Celtic are 13 points to the better. of Hearts with Martin O'Neill in charge. So the Wilfred Nancy era, if you can call it an era, a short-lived stint, is more like it. That is the reason why Celtic are in this position. If they hadn't have hired Wilfred Nancy in the middle of the season, Celtic would be runaway leaders.
All Brendan Rodgers' fault, really.
Well, I mean, he's the guy, you know?
He's getting away with the guy. I just go to Saudi Arabia and take my 12, 14 million a year and...
take a few pictures with a few tigers.
It's all his fault, apparently, according to the Celtic board.
There's a case we made that he did leave them in the lurch, you know?
He did.
Okay. The other thing that happened last night was a penalty shootout in the hurling. Tipperary against Clare in the under-20 Munster final.
It's a cracking photo, that.
I think it's the lads from... it's one of the photographic agencies has it anyway, on the back pages of all the newspapers this morning. It's the Clare keeper, Mark Sheedy. Ugh. He saved 3 of the 6 penalties that he faced and also scored his own penalty. This happened at almost exactly the same time as the VAR stuff was happening.
Yeah. We actually have a video of that if people haven't seen that.
Yeah. So I was actually looking up, because we were talking about Kerry under-20s have set up an All-Ireland final against Tyrone. Kerry Tyrone is always spicy, whether or not it's junior club, intermediate club, senior club, senior inter-county.
Chess.
Yeah. exactly. So the under-20 final, I think it's next week, is it?
I think it might be the week after.
It's Tomás O'Shea in charge of Kerry, and they beat the Rossies. Tyrone beat Kildare last night, and they've set up that final. So that's the one situation there. And obviously Clare now were the under-20 champions as a result of this. It's absolutely sensational penalty.
One of the penalties he saved was from Oisín O'Donoghue as well, I believe, who's obviously scored that outrageous goal for Tipperary against Kilkenny in the All-Ireland semi-final last year to essentially get them over the line. Yeah. So it's not like he's playing against lads here who are just under 20 hurlers, you know.
Penalty was great as well. The final one that he saved was actually probably a reasonable height, but the speed at which it goes, almost always see them going in.
I don't know how any.
Yeah.
I don't know how any penalty is ever saved in hurling. It's it's an incredible art, and as ballsy as it is impressive, to be honest, standing goals for a hurling penalty.
Almost as a. By the way, last night City beat Palace 3-0 with their C team. Cut to the bench, and there's Haaland, and you're like, is he keeping the team for the FA Cup final? And it turns out he was, and it turns out he didn't need to.
Did you see the stuff after the game? Do you know where he does this thing? Remember, I think, did he do it with Kimmich or something one time when he was over in Germany, and he did it with, was it Nathan Redmond he did it with? Do you know when he goes up after and he's like talking? He did it to like every single Crystal Palace player last night. He went up to Lacroix, he went up to Wharton, he went up to, I don't know if you know, but there was 5 or 6 different players he went up and he was doing this thing, and he was laughing around with them and he was chatting, so I don't know what he was doing. But
does this like, you are so good.
Yeah,
you are
so good. It was rare that you see him go up to everybody.
Multiple.
Yeah,
points, yeah.
I wonder, is he...
Hey, sorry, am I not special here, Pep?
Yeah.
Is it not just me you're talking to? You kind of diminished me, Pep, when you talk to all my pals the same way you talk
to me. That's it, like, yeah. Yeah, I imagine the first guy he went up to was
Adam
thinking,
Morton might end up at City, so if that does happen, maybe Pep
will look back on this.
And it won't matter.
Those under-20 finals are on the Saturday, 30th of May.
All right, so...
a little bit of a wait, bit of a gap between them. That's all I have to say on it.
Okay, good stuff. Yeah.
just keeping you up to date.
The news came through just as we came off air yesterday as well, that Manchester United are opening official talks with Michael Carrick, and that he is the chosen one, anointed by the big brains who did a global search and found that the thing that they wanted was right at home all along. Sometimes that's exactly the right thing to do. Sometimes the path of least resistance is the correct path. Sometimes it's the easy way out. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean,
all the Man United fans in the room excited.
Is it better to make a slow decision than the wrong decision in this case?
Yeah.
Like I do think that
what gives you confidence is not the wrong
decision. Yeah, it can still be the wrong decision.
It can still also be the wrong decision. Yeah. It's better to make I suppose the point I'm making is it's better to stay in bed with someone who you know is doing fine than to hop into bed with a new manager who's going to change entirely. I went down a rabbit hole there. And I didn't mean to at this time of the morning. What I'm trying to say is, it's better to bring to keep Michael Carrick now and potentially sack him in 3 or 4 months into the season, but maintain your structure and your strategy and what you're currently doing, than hire, say, an Iraola, for example, who has also been linked with the job, bring in some signings, change your game plan, change your style of play, and then potentially also sack him in a year and a half and suddenly you're in the exact same position again. So
yeah,
I think there's always the opportunity that Michael Carrick will be sacked and then the managers who are currently unavailable because they're at the World Cup will be lined up.
Yeah, like I think this would be a no-brainer to keep him on until next season if Solskjaer didn't happen. It's just the thought of the same thing kind of happening again, which is, you know, scared Man United fans to an extent. And I think to a point he has earned the opportunity. I know there's this season, obviously, it's not a great example of what a regular Man United season should look like, in that they haven't had many cup games, they haven't played in the Champions League or any type of European games. But at the same time, like, he's gotten good results and he's gotten, you know, the best out of players like Manu, who obviously was struggling under Amorim to get any type of minutes. So, like, I feel like it would be very harsh for him not to be given a shot. But it may come down to that thing, and that you're saying that some managers may just not be available during the summer.
I'd be very intrigued to see how long his contract is. It hadn't really been something I'd thought about too much. And then Carragher mentioned it on Monday Night Football, I think, about it not being the worst thing in the world to give him 12 months and keep a steady ship and that sort of thing. And it makes sense, but I'm not at all surprised that this is happening. I actually thought when they appointed him that this is 100% going to happen. I think he's the exact type of person that ownership group, the Manchester United have, would be looking to appoint. Read into that whatever you want, but like, I'm sure he'll be fine.
Tell us what you mean. Go on. Why do you think that?
Because he's a safe pair of hands. He's not going to do anything silly. He's not going to challenge them too much. It's just going to be a similar thing to the Chelsea setup, I think, in that.
Is there a possibility this might work for them in a way that it hasn't for Chelsea?
Yeah, it might do. Yeah, it could very well do. We don't know. We don't know what way they're going to back him. I think it would be interesting if they gave him a 12-month contract, let's say, which is what Carragher suggested. If they did that, it wouldn't make too much sense to back him to the hilt then and give him loads of money and let him decide who he wants to sign, which I don't think they will do. I don't think that's the way they operate. I think that's probably why there was a little bit of angst there with Amorim from the get-go, in that Amorim probably wanted to do things his own way, and not to suggest that he had any right to make that argument, because he didn't get the best out of what he had anyway. I don't know. I think he's a safe pair of hands. I think he's not going to do anything crazily bad. They're not going to be in a situation like they were with Amorim, I don't think, at any point. But it must be said that the situation that he's found himself in has been very advantageous, in that they've only had to play a game a week, and everyone else that they're in and around hasn't had to do that. And they were at such a low. Now the dynamic around what a floor is for these teams has changed since Spurs have gone and done what they've done, but they were at a pretty low ebb when he did come in, and things could only really get so much worse. And then the fact that they went out with the FA Cup almost immediately after he took over, I think, didn't they? Was it just after he took over they lost to Brighton? I think it was. Or was it Fletcher? Maybe Fletcher was there.
Fletcher had a couple of games.
It was just before he came in. But I'm not surprised, essentially, is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
I think the way that he's surrounded himself with more experienced people seems to be something that he's taken from his time in Middlesbrough, that he didn't have the right people around him, that the weak points in his own management weren't covered well enough at Middlesbrough, and he's brought in Steve Holland, obviously doing the defensive stuff with them. Jason Wilcox is the biggest winner of this, because he wants to be the main man at United, and he's said before that he sees himself as, you know, the de facto guy in charge. If he has the power, then Michael Carrick might have a say, but he doesn't have total say. Jason Wilcox still remains the power broker at United. But I think on the other options available, it's telling who signed a new contract in the last 6 or 7 months, or who has been rumored to sign a new contract or about to sign a new contract. Probably tells you a story that United have been asking around.
Who?
Thomas
are you
Tuchel
about?
Signed a new deal.
Tuchel, okay.
Carlo Ancelotti signed a new deal. Luis Enrique is rumoured to be close to signing a new deal. Maybe that was coming anyway because he seems pretty happy at PSG. The only person left on the list of the shortlist United had was Julian Nagelsmann, who hasn't committed to a long-term deal with Germany after the World Cup. But I mean, outside of that, you're going to your second list with the likes of your Iola or Marco Silva, and I just don't think either of those are the proper suit for a club like Man United.
I think Iola's going to be great wherever he goes. I have a lot of time for him. On the point about the contract, you can have a break clause in a three-year deal. I think if you give him 12 months, everybody begins to look around straight away. The way footballers do, they're always thinking, well, I've only got a year left. I'm going to run down my contract, not sign a new deal. So you tell everybody it's three, but you have a break after one where you don't have to pay him.
Yeah.
Like a probationary thing. So there's a public face and there's the...
Yeah, that would be fine, yeah.
Private. The other story that continues to rumble on is the Southampton situation. I don't know if you can see from... they've found a picture of... I mean...
We were trying to figure out this morning, who is taking that picture?
Again, I think this has all come from the press, the
PRO
media
team. Type guy, yeah.
I think there seems to be a big enough team around Middlesbrough. So they actually have a photograph on the papers in the Telegraph and in the London Times where an intern of Southampton is caught videoing Middlesbrough's training session on his phone. The guy's name is William Salt.
Poor guy. I feel so bad for him, like.
Is he not going to turn into win five games in a row, cut my hair guy, and become an internet celebrity in the
hopefully,
meme?
Hopefully, I hope
he'll be in a Paddy Power ad in 6 months.
Yeah, that'd be great. I hope he gets paid. Like,
I know they will do that, that's definitely a possibility. But I imagine if he's an intern going in there as an analyst at Southampton Football Club in the Championship, which in the Premier League last year, he's got high ambitions of actually
managing
a big career in football, whatever that might be. So, I mean, what age do you reckon he is?
I don't know.
I had a guess. Is he in his mid-20s?
Anything between 16 and 30.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So if he's in his mid-20s, like, he's got plenty of time on his side. I let this pass over. But then again, what he did, you get in serious trouble for this. As in, Southampton could sack him. Could they? Because their argument is that he just went off and did this on his own and wasn't asked to do it, and he's just doing these things and he's coming back with all these great ideas, and we had no idea where he was coming up with these unbelievable theories.
And then he has some screenshots of WhatsApp going, good man, well done, great work, really helped us.
Yeah, but that won't matter if those screenshots don't come to light until 10 games into their Premier League season next year, you know? Southampton won't care then.
So in that situation, how much are those screenshots worth? I'm not saying he would extort them. I'm just saying they would purchase them from him.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
They're at a premium right now, though. They're at a premium right now.
Well, of course, it's a very difficult crime to prove.
Imagine how much they'd be worth right now, though.
Well, they're worth a lot to Middlesbrough.
They sure are.
Yeah.
It's funny, the Daily Mail's coverage of this has been actually phenomenal over the last couple of days since it came about. They've had photos of... there's a photo of Tondo Eckhart with his Manager of the Month award. Who's in the background?
Yeah.
He's William Salt, just circled in the background. But they also have, they seem to have a bit of a paper trail going on. They might be the Mail bringing it across. I presume they're looking into it and crossing,
because he's buying coffees in hotels
Yeah, they have that.
Oh my God.
They understand that his bank card was used on Thursday to buy a coffee at Rockcliffe Hall Golf Club, owned by Borough Chairman Steve Gibson.
Right.
And it would seem if they are able to track, I think what they're trying to do is, can they track this bank card's movements over the course of the year to see, was this guy spending...
Don't tap and go, lads.
Was he spending...
Cash only. Yeah, cash is king.
Was he tapping all around the country throughout Southampton's unbeaten run?
I don't expect anyone to know this, but... Are you allowed to do that? Because it's not a criminal investigation, is it?
I don't know how they got. They must have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I'm incredibly disappointed that he wasn't actually in a bush. I had this
he's
vision
hiding behind a tree and
he's just beside a bush.
He's just standing beside a tree, really.
Yeah. Sky Sports did an expose on it yesterday as well. They retraced his steps like a true crime documentary. Yeah, it was like a sensational.
We believe that he moved from this location in the car park to this location behind this gate, and on his gate it says unauthorized access, whatever.
It was like a JFK conspiracy theory documentary where it's like,
so
we believe he stood here on the grassy knoll.
Well, we're going to have to find out soon what's going on, what they're going to charge him with here. Like, they don't have all day to be tracking all these credit cards. I mean, the playoff final's in 10 days' time, if even. It'll be less than that. So,
yeah,
this is going to have to be resolved before then.
Get your finger out.
So I'm intrigued to see how it develops, and I want a Netflix thing on this.
Oh, there will be for sure.
I don't think there will be, but I'd like it.
Is it fair to kick Southampton out because of this?
If they did it across the season, potentially yes. If it was a once-off thing, I don't think so. It's happened before.
If they did it across the season, I kind of think that this is like a weird. So you watched us train. We were in a public place. We were training. Like, anybody could have walked past that and seen.
I don't know if it's a public place if there's a sign in the gate saying private property, no entry.
But it's a hotel, is it not?
Well, the private property thing, I imagine, is beyond this point. You know, but then there's, again, you're getting into legal stuff kind of there. Like, can you stick a camera and a tripod up and record into that unauthorized
if
place?
He's up, like, 10 floors up in the hotel, can he video from the window? I'm sure he can.
Is it fair to kick them out? It is a weird one. I wouldn't be staunch on it. I wouldn't be like, it's an absolute disgrace. Get rid of them. They're gone. But at the same time, I'm kind of going, like, that you're not allowed to do that for a reason. There's a reason you're not allowed to do it, and you've done it anyway.
The other whole thing was like, this happens all the time, of course. You know, in NFL, it's like, it happens all the time. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Now, they did come down strong on Spygate in the NFL eventually. They were like, no, you can't do it. Like, you're watching me train. So
Look, of course, and I did say that. I don't know when it was. Was it yesterday? Day before? I'm not sure. So much going on this week. But Middlesbrough, like, I can understand why they'd be annoyed by it. And absolutely, if you can get them booed out and get yourself into the Premier League, of course do.
Yes.
But they should still be looking at themselves going, had what turned out to be 210 minutes to get that game done, and they didn't.
It does remind me of the Chris Eubank, Steve Collins fight, where Steve Collins was hypnotised by Tony, what's his name?
Tell this story. This is amazing. I don't know how many people. I'm sure people do know it, but it's always worth talking about.
1995. It was the rematch between Collins and Eubank. I think this is the one that was in Mill Street, and Collins emerged at one of the pre-fight press conferences and pretended to be hypnotized. By the health guru, Tony, what's his name? He has
Tony Quinn, Michael Tony says Quinn. In the comments. Tony and Finn Quinn. Barfurious doubles
Tony
up.
Tony Quinn, medicine
that.
Man. Mm. And Eubank believed it. And Collins was like, I'm not going to feel pain. I've been hypnotized, so I can't feel pain. He can't do any damage to me. And to this day,
he still believes.
It's in Chris Eubank's head. Was it in Middlesbrough's head? Is that why they played so badly over the two legs? Now, it costs extra time, right?
Goes extra time.
So they had chances.
They played well.
They played really well in the majority of the first leg and for the first 20 minutes of the second leg. But when push came to shove, they looked shot to bits.
So just to answer your question on the, like, is it legal to do this? It's not.
Okay.
So it was after the Bielsa incident.
They changed the rules.
They changed the rules. So rule 127 of the EFL regulations prohibits clubs from observing or attempting to observe another club's training session within 72 hours of a scheduled match. So it is literally against the rules what they did.
I think if they've been doing this over the course of the... See, this is the problem then, is like, where do you draw the line? Because there's teams like Wrexham, like Derby, who have missed out on the playoffs altogether as a result.
Oh, they're straight back in, yeah.
And this is the thing, like, and you're obviously not going to do that because they've been caught now. But if you're going to use it as, if you're going to use them doing it to other teams as justification.
I think when you get caught, the crime is for that, the statute of limitations and
the rest are gone. And but can you still use those other crimes to punish you for the
heavier
you've been
sanction,
caught for?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so there is a points deduction that would apply next season.
That's no good to Borough, though.
Well, no, sorry. I think you get kicked out and there's a points deduction.
Oh, okay, sorry, right. Yeah.
Or so, there's a points deduction and it's in the future.
The points deduction, if I was Middlesbrough and they gave them a points deduction for, and they went, if they went and won the playoff final or in the Premier League and got a points deduction, that would be even more annoying for Middlesbrough, because they are now in the Championship and there's a team in the Premier League who we're likely to get relegated anyway.
Next
and
time they come down, they'll be minus three. Right, we'll come back to this. A reminder, Off the Wall Breakfast is with Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets, contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage is 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. You can buy online at viagraconnect.ie. It's subject to suitability following pharmacist consultations. One more thing that we want to play out with, but we don't have anybody to play it out, so we won't do that. It was the Charlie McConnell was on with Owen last night on the evening show. He came into studio for about 35 minutes and they were talking about loads of different aspects of sports funding, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts, so you should go back and have a listen to it. Yeah, okay, great. So the Minister for Culture, Communication and Sport is Charlie McConnell, and Owen was asking him about the why certain sports organisations are much better than other sports organisations at getting funding. Owen made the point that the GAA gets 96 times the funding of boxing, for example, and he asked McConnell if there's favouritism being shown.
Yeah, and listen, the reality there is that for most boxing clubs, they are renting premises or leasing premises. So they don't tend to build new premises. I know in my local town in Donegal, for example, Cairn Donagh Boxing Club did build the premises there a number of years ago and got community sports facilities funding towards that, but that would be the exception. What we want to encourage there is that where they develop a relationship and have a reasonable lease with the premises, that they can invest in the facility. But also, and like the boxing club I just mentioned there that does wonderful work, the Korean Boxing Club, they hadn't applied before, and they can apply for equipment where you have the premises. A lot of your investment then can be in equipment instead. And we want to get the message out there to all of those boxing clubs that you can apply for equipment and you can be supported through it, and you should do that.
It does feel, and look, I'm sure the majority of our listeners are GAA fans or have some connection to the GAA in some capacity. It does feel that this government, and it's no different to previous governments, leans towards Gaelic games in an unreasonably favourite manner. Like too much favouritism being shown in terms of how much funding is being pumped into it. Like you look at the budget last year, and sure, there's 1.5 million euro for high performance athletes, which covers a lot of different sports. I'm sure boxers are part of that. When it comes to specific sports, you've got 727,000 euro to the IRFU, 983,000 euro to the GAA specifically in the budget. I've just outlined what's happened there in the last sports capital grants funding, the favouritism shown to the GAA, you could argue, in that round of sports funding. And we're talking about an organisation right now that the conversation is happening around GAA Plus and how much revenue it's taking in through that stream. It's an organisation that's having Leeds versus Manchester United taking place in Croke Park this summer. It's a fairly flush organisation in terms of what it's bringing in, and you could definitely make the case that it requires less help than the majority of boxing clubs, for example, around the country.
Well, listen, first of all, Owen, I can assure you it's not the case that we're seeking to prefer any one sport over another. And that hasn't been the case in recent community sports facilities fund rounds either. The reality has been that GAA clubs have been traditionally very good and very proactive in terms of making applications. And of course, as an organisation and as clubs, they do wonderful, wonderful work within communities. But what we want to, but there hasn't been an inbuilt bias in any way in relation to extra funds going towards one sport over another.
When I get to our start of the week, David Clifford.
Yeah.
I just scored his 24th.
There you go. Yeah. So that's Charlie McConnell last night in conversation with Owen. And I, in fairness to him, he did acknowledge that there are difficulties within the way that the application process works, where disadvantaged communities find it harder to find people who are going to be able to fill in the forms. They find it harder to get long-term leases, and they find it nearly impossible to own their own properties. And it has been set up in a way that in the past that was a massive blocker. Now, it does sound like there's at least some sense that they're trying to rebalance that. Mm. It's probably not happening fast enough. It's probably not happening in a way that is structured. Like, really what we need here is a community organisation staffed by lawyers and people who can draft legislation, who are willing to work on behalf of clubs, even though they might not be a member of that club, to fill in these forms and make sure they're getting the grants and have them checked by the department first before it goes in. But I think we're a long way away from that.
Yeah. it's one of them where the immediate thought is, why not just make the applications as simple and as easy as possible? But then the caveat that comes with that is that you need to still make sure that you've put all the right kind of stipulations in place, that the money ends up in the right places, in the right hands, and going...
It's public money, so you have to be very careful.
Exactly,
with it.
Yeah. So,
but there's a lot of it.
There is, and that's the thing. And boxing's an interesting example to use, obviously, because it's not football, it's not rugby, it's not the ones that come to your head straight away as far as being the largest sports, but it is one of our more successful sports as well, and some of the biggest stars that have ever come from the country are in boxing. And that's a stark figure, like 96 times is a, I mean, regardless of any context, now something being 96 times larger than something else is remarkable.
Even
so,
apparently it's 20 times more active numbers.
Yeah,
so that
yeah.
was the that was the disparity.
There. Yeah, yeah. So, but it's good that these conversations are happening. I mean, whether I'd actually something comes from it, like it's all good to hear talk, and it's always about the substance that comes behind it. But it does seem as though that there is movement going on there anyway.
We'll follow up on that story as well over the next while, but I would wholeheartedly recommend you, especially as there are by-elections going on, and you can raise this on the doorsteps when people come to you. If it's of interest to you, you can get in touch with the show. You can WhatsApp us on 0879 180 180. You can leave a comment, youtube.com/offtheball. And if you hit follow there anytime we go live, we'll let you know about it.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
GAA.
And listening, I wouldn't have put Mark as the manager type. Now, Mark's been extremely, he's always been an extremely smart player, but in terms of that management role, I possibly would have seen him as a coach.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.